Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Good morning. Good morning, Philly. Good morning, everyone, wherever you're listening. Today is May 26, 2023. Thank you for tuning in to FetLife Station. This is FetLife Station Internet Radio. You are listening to Life Without Parole, LWAP Radio. My name is Stacey Mandel. I'm in Philly, where it's definitely still a Philly thing. And I am co-hosting with Robert Groves, a.k.a. Reentry Rob, who is 27 years down on his life without the possibility of parole sentence at SCI Phoenix. And it is an honor and a privilege for me to be able to co-host with him. Today, we are pleased to feature Mr. Scott Harmon, who is also serving a life without parole sentence with Rob at SCI Phoenix. And I will also be speaking with Scott's dear friend, James Price, and hopefully James's wife, Shanika Lewis Price, who is Scott's cousin. And as well, I'll be speaking with his mother, Adrienne Harmon. Reentry Rob will be calling in around 9:45 himself. And so we'll just get right to this Life Without Parole sentence with Scott Harmon. Good morning, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm doing great over here. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming on to the show.
No problem.
And let's get right into it since we don't have a lot of time. So please tell our listeners you're arrested and the sentence you're serving.
Okay, I've been incarcerated in 2008, December of 2008. I was 22 years old, and I'm currently serving a DBI sentence, a death by incarceration sentence.
Yep. So, would you please explain what does DBI mean to you?
What it means to me means a lot, but, you know, just to explain it to the audience, it's a never-ending torture. You know, it's every day you have to, you know, fight the evil that you're going to get out one day, and like I said, it's never ending fight.
Yeah, and that word, I just want everyone to hear. You're saying it's never ending.
Never ending.
Yep. Are you involved with any organizational work? If you are, tell us what you're doing.
SCI.
Wait a sec.
State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
So yeah,
the names of your organization and the objectives, if any.
I'm currently a CADB member. CADB's goal is, CADB is a grassroots organization. The goal is to end death by incarceration. CADB stands for a coalition to abolish death by incarceration.
I'm a member too.
Okay. I'm an R2R member, Right to Redemption member. And Right to Redemption's agenda is to show and prove, you know, that human beings are, you know, worthy of redemption and capable of growth and change. When we are sentenced to DBI sentences, the thought is that, you know, we're basically the crimes that were committed, or, you know, that we can't, you know, change or grow from whoever it was that we were that day, in particular that. I think that's wrong.
Yeah. So, what current initiatives are you involved in or trying to get off the ground since you seem to be involved and an activist
current initiative, me and a couple of guys here at Phoenix started an Instagram page called NDBIPA.
Yep, I follow it.
You do? Thanks for supporting us. It's
Say the name of it again.
It's NDBI, Death by Incarceration, PA. NDBIPA on Instagram. And the thought behind this was to give, you know, a voice to those that don't, you know, don't have a voice.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
To give a voice to us that don't have a voice and give us access to the world to share our stories, our pain, you know, our accomplishments, and give a visual to DBI, put faces to it.
Yeah.
A lot of people in society, especially like a lot of like my cousins and friends and family members, just my family members and friends, they were surprised to see that there's so many men and women who've been incarcerated in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. Like, people just don't know these things, and I think the visual can be helpful. But that was the idea behind it.
Absolutely. It's very compelling visually. How does the Department of Corrections address issues for those serving DBI sentences, maybe particularly mental health?
None at all. I don't believe that they address it at all. I think it's non-existent. I can't remember the last time I've seen anyone from the mental health department, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I mean, when someone passes away in your family or a loved one, a close relative passes away, the chaplain comes to the unit where you're at. But other than that, you know, unless you have like a crisis, and we're no experts, we don't know, you know, we can't explain. And a lot of men here, they don't want to, you know, talk about what they're going through. So it's non-existent in my eyes.
Yeah. Reentry, Rob.
That's a big issue.
Say that again?
I said mental health is a big issue. You can see it. You can see the men deteriorating.
Yeah, this is... It's hard for me as a mindfulness instructor, which is all about working with your mind, to hear this and to not be able to make headway with the prisons. But that's another topic. But I'm sorry. So Rob has told me also, you know, that parenthood is really important to you. What have you missed the most about being a parent?
So I was incarcerated when I was 22, and my son was born when I was 21. I didn't really get to spend, the thing that I regret the most is that, you know, the obvious, like, I haven't been there. I haven't been there for him, and he doesn't know, like, the human being that I am. He doesn't, you know my past or my upbringing. Or too many of my loved ones, you know, especially the women that raised me, like my grandmother and my mom. So I regret that. I regret that part the most, that I wasn't there to, you know, be in his life.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about your family dynamic growing up, and how that's influenced you, particularly as a father?
I think I was raised by my grandmother due to issues that my mother and father had. Father incarcerated. Mom was on drugs when I was younger. But my grandmother, she did the best. She did the absolute best. And I'm not here because of anything that she did wrong. But she did the best with what she had. She did an excellent job, really. I think the person that I am today is, you know, because of her. But
yeah.
I didn't have my mother or my father growing up. They're both here today, which lets me know that change and growth is possible, because they're both terrific parents today, even though they weren't here when I was younger. But, you know, I commend them for who they are today.
Yeah, and I've spoken to your mom at least, and she is a lovely, lovely human being. Let's talk about the Groves Notebook. Rob wants me to ask you about the Groves Notebook and this radio show. How do these two platforms and your platform and DBIPA, how do these three platforms actually serve you and others?
So the biggest thing, I think, with the platform, the Rose Notebook, LWOT Radio, and DBIPA, I think it shows the humanity in all of us that are serving DBI. A lot of times that gets lost in the crimes that were committed. And I get it because, you know, the pain and suffering that comes, you know, that the victims have to endure, you can't forget about that. But on the other side, from the state, what the state is doing to human beings, I just don't think that it's right. And these platforms show the humanity in us. It shows that, you know, that we're more than just, you know, the crimes that were committed. It shows that, you know, we have people who love and care for us. And, you know, it just shows the humanity of this.
Yeah, that's why I'm here doing this with you. So, one more question. Can you use this opportunity to tell society who Scott Harmon is today?
That's a tough one.
I know.
I think I'm a, you know, a good human being who doesn't deserve to be in a place like this, along with so many others who are good human beings that, you know, deserve the second chance. I strive to be a better human being every day than the prior day that I was. I don't believe that I deserve to die in prison. And I'm going to try to continue to show the world that.
I agree with you completely. And it's despicable. It's a really heinous part of our humanity that we are so punitive, harsh, cold, and inhumane. So I am in solidarity with you. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before that 1 minute warning comes on?
Hashtag NDBI. that's like the slogan we've been using around here.
Okay.
You have to continue to hashtag NDBI. We have to continue to shame. I believe we have to continue to shame what's going on, what they're doing to human beings in Pennsylvania, specifically. And then the more that we shame them, and the more that we're showing how incarcerating human beings for life, for no other reason but to see them die in prison, how it's affecting the communities, how it's not helping.
Right, and how it's also pretty hypocritical.
Right,
so,
it is.
And also not under the control of young people, the circumstances that they are born in and raised in.
I believe that is contributing to the gun violence that's going on now.
Yeah.
I believe that this what's going on in Pennsylvania with the DOC. I believe that it's contributing. I mean,
would you elaborate on that a little bit?
So a lot of the older guys that I talked to and a lot of older guys that I've met throughout my time in prison, they have like nephews and sons and younger brothers who, you know, maybe participating in gun violence, and if they had more, you know, not even if they were there, but if they had more access to some of the youth, or if we had more access to the youth to warn them and kind of be like, what they think DBI is, like a preventative measure.
You have 1 minute left.
To commit crime, like, I believe that we can beat it by our stories, by the knowledge that we have, by even like the time that a lot of these older guys have in, like the younger guys on the street that are participating in the crimes that they are, they don't understand that their lives are going to be, you know, snatched away from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be transformative justice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harmon.
I
appreciate you. I appreciate that you're doing what you're doing to try to, you know, reach the world and shine light on our humanity from behind the walls and the bars that you're in. So don't underestimate every single thing that, every little thing, every big thing that each one of us does.
Mm-hmm.
It's much needed.
Okay.
And it's making a difference.
Thank you for using Securus.
Take good care.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it.
And we are back. This is Life Without Parole Radio, LWAP Radio. And I have on the line with me Scott Harmon's dear friend, James. And we'll be hearing, too, from James's wife, who is Scott's cousin, Shanika Lewis Price. Hello. Good morning, Shanika.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, I had the phone on speaker. Is that better? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. So thank you for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
And would you like to just tell us again exactly who you are and your connection to Scott and your upbringing maybe?
Yes. So Scott and I are cousins, but we grew up as basically like brothers and sisters. We were raised in the same household by my grandmother. And myself, who was raised by my grandmother. So we're cousins, but we grew up as, you know, brothers and sisters, like brothers and sisters.
And would you just care to get into how his sentence has affected you and maybe the family, if you know of that?
Well, for me, definitely emotionally, it saddens me just to think about it. Whenever I talk to him on the phone, I mean, I don't share this with him, but it's like I have anxiety, and it's just sad to me because I just don't know what the true outcome will eventually be on his life. And when you don't know, when you have a relative that's incarcerated for that long term, it's just sad.
I can only imagine. Are you able to speak a little bit about what your relationship was like before he went to prison?
Growing up, we were semi close because I'm almost, how many years older am I? What, 7 years? I can't even remember. But I'm a little older than him, much older than Scott. So when I was growing up, I was doing my thing. He was doing his thing. But we would talk. Scott was a very hard worker. He was motivated. It was a time when he was working, you know, two jobs and going to school. And I admired him for that because he could have been doing different things. I'm trying to think of other stuff because I'm going way mm-hmm. back. But for the most part, I feel like growing up, we were just raised like brothers and sisters, but I was pretty much, and he was doing anything. I was in college when he still was in school.
And real quick, the reason why Scott was living with you?
The reason why he was my grandmother?
Yep.
It was his mom. So his mother is my aunt, which is my grandmother's daughter. And she struggled with drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his dad as well.
And he was working two jobs.
Yes, and going to school at one time.
Yeah, so he was providing and contributing.
Yes, he would help my grandmother out.
Yeah. Can you talk about your opinion when it comes to Scott and his trial?
Can I add one thing to that real quick, the last question?
Okay, everybody, this is James Price. Go, James.
Not only was he working the two jobs, he was going to school, he was very motivated, he was he also had his own place. He had got his own apartment. He was in a committed relationship. At the time of this happened, he had a baby on the way. And all of that stuff goes into this as well, because it did more than just change his life and his future. It also did the same thing for his son. It did the same thing for his grandmother, because his grandma took it very, very hard. And she did whatever she could to help him. She even did things as far as putting the house up to help with a lawyer, stuff like that. And it just affected her in a way that it took a turn, and it affected her health. And the most important thing is, even to this day, Scotty is still very positive of this outcome, no matter what it was. Like, we never saw him very upset, and we never saw him down. When you talk to him on the phone and stuff like that, he's never down, in my opinion. He's always upbeat, and it's kind of hard to believe how someone can actually handle something like this when they don't come from this type of lifestyle or background. Because, like we said, he was very hardworking, two jobs, never had a record, nothing. So it's just unbelievable the faith that he had.
Yeah. Let's get into that a little bit more, about the fact that he'd never had a record and he's being sentenced in his trial.
The reason why is because, to be honest, there was no motive, no murder weapons. From what the cops said, it was more people involved than just the one person. They said the person was attacked by different people at the time. And out of all the people that was out there, they just pinned on this one person. And like I said, it was no motive, no murder weapon, no evidence. It was a testimony from hearsay where the person actually got on the stand and said she lied about it. So I just don't get how they have him incarcerated for this, for life with no parole, especially when he never had a prior record at all. Nothing. To just take someone and throw their life away like this so easy with no evidence. I mean, what part of justice is that? The system is definitely broken, especially in Philadelphia. As you look left and right and you see things happen to so many different people. And at some point, somebody really need to do something about it and correct the system. So that's my take on it. Shanika, would you like to add anything to that?
You pretty much got everything that I was thinking. I mean, there were a couple of his trials that we did attend, and we were there to witness the conflict, the inconsistencies with certain people's stories that just didn't add up. But he still was convicted.
The detective stories didn't even add up.
Mm-hmm.
So all of it was terrible.
That is gut-wrenching. Because we only have about 5 minutes left, five-ish. Go a little over. I would love to know more about how you guys maintain a relationship with Scott. Many times have you had the opportunity to visit Scott?
So we have not. And
lately, when he was into.
I can't recall how many times. So we mostly did video visits. But we have not went in physically to see him. And I partly take ownership for that, even though you didn't ask me. But and I've never shared this with Scott. For me, it's an emotional fear. Just even just thinking about it, it just saddens me. And I don't, and I can't really explain it. Like, I don't want to see him that way. And I know it's not about me. It's about him being able to see his family. But I
sent Shanika.
And he wants to see my kids. I don't want my kids to see him like that, even though my kids, like, my kids have a relationship with him, you know, of course, through their own and talking to him, they know who he is. But it's just hard. It really is for me. And that's why I've been holding that. But I've never shared that with him.
Yeah. There's a lot of pain here. This is the heaviest stuff probably there is, watching or, you know, seeing someone even in your mind's eye, let alone physically. And what he described, you know, well, you didn't, I don't know if you heard it, but anyway, a lot of, suffering. So how would you describe, Scott, before prison? Like, is there anything in particular that stands out, before and now? Something you really remember about him before, or anything that you know about him now?
Or I feel like, sorry for all of this, Scott, he still is a very respectful young man. You know, he just was doing what he had to do in life. And when I mean doing what he had to do in life, meaning just working and going to school. He was like,
he was in college, right?
Yes. Good kid. So when all of this went down, the family was shocked. We were shocked to even that his name was involved, because this was not his life. So we just didn't, you know, he was the opposite of the not all of them, but most of the kids in comparison now, I feel like he's this, but he has definitely bored. Just talking to him, his conversation, like, he's a man, you know, it's different in comparison to who he was, you know, now. He's a great father. Like, he's definitely raising his son while he's incarcerated. We have many conversations about his son and the different like advice that he gives his son from in prison, and just talking to him and communicating with him. He talks to my son about, my son is in basketball, so conversation. But I definitely have grown as a man. So he's incarcerated.
He's so positive that you can tell he's incarcerated.
I have never spoken to him and he sound down, sad, or said anything negative. Never. It's me on the other end feeling sad and down, but he's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so are you both, I'm assuming, sure that things could have turned out differently if Scott had adequate legal representation at his trial?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Despite, you know, the obstacles he has to parenting with his son, or being an uncle to your children, how do you view Scott? I mean, you were just touching on it a bit.
How do we view?
Yeah, how do you view him even as a parent or as an uncle, even though he's obviously hindered by being in prison? You said he's spoken to your son before.
I don't think you can ask for anything more out of a human being, in prison or out of prison. The way that he handled things and how strong he is emotionally, he's a faith-based child. Like, even before he was incarcerated, he used to go to church. when my son, when he talked to my son down about something, I mean, he really talks to him in a way where it's though he can just turn the whole situation around. Because this day and age is a little bit different from our age group growing up. So kids may take things a little bit harder now than we used to. We used to go outside and play all the time. So if something affects them and they start thinking negative about it, when he talked to Scotty, it's like, I guess with Scotty being in his situation, it pretty much can't get much worse than a situation like that. And if he can stay positive, anybody can stay positive. Anybody can stay positive. And for him to have that faith and to talk that and to speak that into existence to a child, to understand these things, that's a lot of wisdom.
Yeah.
A lot of wisdom, a lot of growth, it's a lot of maturing. It takes a lot to be able to do that. So,
That's pretty inspirational.
Yeah.
Sounds like an inspirational note to close up with. Is there anything else either of you would like to say?
I can't wait to get home.
Yeah, that love them. We thinking positive, praying and hoping for a positive outcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for both of you making time to come on this morning. And I hope you have a great weekend, and I wish you well. Peace.
Thank you.
Yep. And we'll be right back. LWAP listeners, please don't go anywhere. I know it be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on. Hold on, I'm going home. Oh, oh, oh. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl. Welcome back to Life Without Parole. This is Stacey Mandel. I'm going to be putting on the line Adrian Harmon, Scott's mother.
Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm blessed and highly favored.
Okay. So let's get into your son.
Okay.
And if you wouldn't mind, I know it's sensitive material, but if you could just share a little bit about how his death by incarceration sentence has affected you and the family.
Okay, before we get started, it may be like a little noise in the back because I'm in a rehabilitation center.
Okay.
All right. How has incarcerated affected me and my family?
Yep.
It has torn my family apart. Currently, right now, I don't know where my daughter at. You know, she really is devastated about this because that was her brother. I only have two children, and Scott was her big brother. My mother passed away. It just basically tore my family apart. Like, my family is scattered. It just was me, my mother, and my children, and my niece. You know, everyone is gone. You know, my son is incarcerated right now. I'm taking care of my daughter's son because I don't know where my daughter's at. And it's a lot.
Yeah. So can you talk about your relationship with Scott before prison?
Before prison, Scotty was my son. Scotty wasn't never a bad kid. Scotty just was guilty by association. And even his friends, they just did like little devilish stuff. Scotty was a good kid. We had a beautiful relationship. Like, we could talk about anything. Yeah. Scotty can talk to me about anything. And Scotty's my best friend. He was my rock. Like, no matter his accomplishments and everything, Mom was right there, you know. I wasn't there for all of the time, but I was there for some of the good time. But my mother raised Scotty. And Scotty was her son. So, Scotty was a good child.
So, what's your opinion about Scott and his sentence and whether or not you feel like it was a fair trial?
Scotty's sentence, Scotty didn't have a fair trial. His sentence wasn't fair. They gave my son life without parole. He's never been locked up. He has one parking violation. When they went looking for my son, the only picture that they have of him was his driver's license. You know, Scotty never been incarcerated, and the sentence that they put on him was harsh. The trial was not fair. The attorney that we hired did not do anything. He just took our money and robbed us from a trial.
Okay.
We lost everything. My mother sold her house. That was the family's house. We lived in the house for 47 years. And my mother sold her house.
And why did she sell the house?
To get Scotty a lawyer. And the lawyer did nothing. My mother lived with my niece over in Delaware. And I was in the shelter. You know, until I found housing. When my daughter came home from Job Corps, there was no home to come home to. You know, her family was scattered behind this harsh sentence, behind false imprisonment. You know, the justice system that we have in Philadelphia sucks.
Can you tell me a little bit more about when you say false imprisonment? How do you know? How do you know it was false? How do you know he wasn't deserving of the sentence?
Scotty wasn't a part of the crime. Scotty was set up himself. This girl that testified against him that they believed finally got on the stand and said that she lied on Scotty. Scotty wasn't there.
Yeah.
She also said that she only said what they told her to say. She even acted like she didn't know that Scotty was locked up. The DA asked her. It's crazy. Give me 1 minute. The DA had asked her, do you know what his sentence was? And she going to say no. She didn't even know Scotty was locked up. Then the DA asked her, didn't you testify against him? Do you know what we gave him? We gave him life, the capital, life without parole. You know they let this child walk out. You know, our justice system sucks. We need to we need to do something about it. It's a lot of young men incarcerated for something that they didn't do.
Yeah. So, times, if any, have you had the opportunity to physically visit your son since his incarceration?
Not many. First, he was in Green Prison, and we had to travel up in the mountains to go see him. The bus ride was 6 hours up there and 6 hours back. My mother and I used to travel, but by her being up in age, it got a toll on her leg. Since he's been back here, I've only seen him one time because I don't drive, and my family are all elderly. They be at work. They don't, you know, it's hard to get somebody to take me to see him.
And they don't provide transportation?
No, ma'am. Not that I know of.
Yeah, I think they used to.
They, like I said, I know the bus ride. I used to go all the way up in to Green Prison, but I don't know anything about Phoenix.
Yeah.
They changed the criteria and everything.
So this is obviously the harshest sentence, right, that we can imagine.
Yes, ma'am.
And mental fortitude is a must, you know. So how do you think Scott has fared in your eyes with his mental fortitude?
Scotty is, how can I say, I'm trying to find the right words, but Scotty has overcome a lot, being never incarcerated and just thrown into that situation. His standards, he's been strong, like, his strength. I also could hear his weakness and hear his sadness, because there is a sadness behind all of that. It took a little toll on him. I applaud my son. I told him never to give up, never lose the faith. I know that my son will come home. It's just a matter of when. But Scotty, at first Scotty didn't, you know, he wasn't eating. He was thin. He was desperate for everybody to hear him. Hear his cry. He was writing letters here and there. Like, everything, we tried to accommodate him with a typewriter, and we did so he could write to whom he ever needed to write to prove his innocence, you know. So,
yeah. I can't imagine. What is your relationship with Scott's son? And if Scott was home, do you think the relationship between you and his son, Chris, would be different?
First, I don't have a relationship with his son. And yes, I know it would be different. My son would be a father to his son. We would have been the opportunity to get to know him, to love him. It's wrong. It's wrong. He never got a chance to be a father to his son. You know, he never got a chance. And I don't know Christopher. Christopher know us, but he don't know us. Like, he knows Scott got a mom. I'm trying to get to know him. But it's a distance thing. He's 15, he'll be 16 years old this year.
Yeah.
Hard. It's really hard.
So, despite the obstacles here, how do you view Scott as a parent, even though he's been denied the opportunity to be a parent? How do you view him as a parent?
I view him as a good father, a loving father, a caring father, a nurturer, a positive role model. Before Scott got locked up, Scotty liked children. Children enjoyed being around Scotty. The kids in the neighborhood, Scotty would give you the shirt off of his back if he could. But Scotty liked kids. He used to take the kids and do things with them, play a little basketball with the little boys and stuff. And,
wasn't he in college?
Yes, Scotty was in college. Scotty did time. He went to Penn State.
Was he enrolled in Penn State when he got arrested?
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry to interrupt, but you were reminding me of that.
Ma'am?
I said sorry to interrupt, but you had reminded me of that.
Yes, Scotty was. He's going to Penn State. I never had a problem with Scotty. Scotty graduated with honors. Scotty had a job. He had two jobs, matter of fact, because he was buying a car, a brand new car. And he said, Mom, I gotta get another job to put gas in it. But Yeah. All of that was stripped away from him.
So if you had the opportunity to speak to those who hold your son's freedom, you know, in their hands, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that they wrongfully locked my son up. My son's no murderer. He's no saint, but he's no murderer. He would give you the shirt off of his back. He really would. When the sentence first went down, I was angry. But now all I can say is I forgive y'all. I forgive y'all for making the decision that you made about my child's life. I forgive y'all. I pray that nothing like this happened to your child. But I forgive y'all from the depths of my heart. Please, correct the wrong. My son was totally innocent. He is totally innocent. You know, I look back when Scott first got locked up and everything he lost. But I look at him today and tell him I'm proud of my son. I'm proud of him. He's the best son that I could ever want. Because I know in my heart my son is innocent. And I know in my heart the truth will be told. Please let my son go. Please let him go.
Ms. Harmon, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for wanting to hear my truth.
We know it's not easy, and we know this is really painful. We know it's really stressful, and I know that you're also, you know, working on healing your own physical self right now. So extra gratitude to you for coming on and for sharing this way with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we wish you well.
Wish you well, too. Thank you. And y'all have a blessed day.
Yeah, you too. Listeners, please don't go anywhere. This is Life Without Parole. We'll take a quick musical break, and then we will be right back. So different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. Alone. Just hold on, we're going on. Going on.
Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home.
walk on me, I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone.
Just hold on, we're going. Welcome back. This is Life Without Parole Radio. We've got Rob on the line. I hope, Rob.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, all our listeners. Good morning, Stace.
Good morning. That's what happens when you're on a prison phone. Okay.
No, we're all right. We're gonna go ahead and push through. We're having some technical difficulties, but I just, you know, how did the interview go? How was everything?
So Scott was on. Scott is he told us about his Instagram initiative and the DBIPA, which I encourage everyone to follow on Instagram. And we heard from Scott's cousin Shanika and her husband James, who's his good friend, and then we heard from his mother just now, Adrian.
Okay.
Emotional.
I could imagine. And before you, while you were working on the interview this week, and we're short on time, you know, this is about the family, so I think we had like maybe 6 minutes. I just wanted to thank you, Stace, because I know personally what you go through, you know, diving into people's lives. You know, we tap into areas that people try to like push away, forget, not tap back into. And I know that that's extremely difficult. And I know it's difficult on my end, sitting down with these men and kind of like diving into their stories and stuff like that. And I wanted to ask you, what's your mindset like during and after those interviews with the families, friends, and supporters?
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. This show, it's a radio show, and it has a little bit of an entertainment aspect to it, and it's like something people are listening to, but it's really not entertainment at all. It's more like education. I look at it as education and informing and raising awareness, and it's pretty brutal. It's pretty, honestly, it's really heavy. I myself, I've never experienced anything so heavy because the more that I speak with people, the more I understand the torture. It's a different topic for another show maybe we can get into, but it is actually torture, not just for those who are serving sentences in all the ways that we, the public, might be able to imagine, without being there ourselves and being in their shoes, but then when you actually speak to their loved ones, and that's called quote-unquote silent sentence, right? But it's people finally getting their voices amplified on the show.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
I guess from my side, Stacey, is like, this is an entertainment. I know this is an entertainment for you, as well. These are human, these are real-life human experiences, that we become privy to, and while I think that I'm, similarly situated, no one's story is the same. And it's like, many of these pre-interviews, when I sit down with them and they go from, just a simple conversation. I mean, from the interview to a simple conversation, just life in general. And I not only, carry, my personal story, but, all those that I come across, with Elwha and the Groves Notebook for that matter. And it was like, if I wasn't already emotionally invested, this only heightened, that experience, It's like, this inside approach that we take each week, I having you explain that and hearing you on the phone when we're prepping each week, for the families and the loved ones from the inside, it's like we provide that true life account, that you simply, I say this each week, that you can't get from nowhere else. It's like, I have this obligation, Stacey, like I wake up each and every morning, to make sure that I peel back that layer that I'm in control of. You know what I'm saying? And I feel as though if I keep throwing it back, I'll finally reach the core. And, you know, it starts with one person, one thought followed by one action. I believe that action creates momentum. Momentum equals numbers. You know, take fads, for example, on space. You know, there's simply an interest or a practice that is followed, you know, by those that are searching, you know. And I believe I can change that culture from within. And just to tie back, you know, get back to like what we were saying, being locked away, you know, behind these walls, these cages, these locks, these cells, you know, it only hinders one thing, you know, for us
on the inside. Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording.
It only hinders one thing from the inside, and that's the physical momentum, you know. But good luck on trying to imprison our minds. And that's what I believe we provide, you know, each and every week, you know, that the release, you know, for thousands of the voiceless, you know what I'm saying? And I believe we're blessed. We're both blessed with, you know, with several platforms, you know, that do such, you know, for those behind bars and the people that support them on the outside. So I kind of wanted to tap into that because I know that we haven't touched on that, you know, that the aspect of each and every week interviewing the families. And you've told me several times where you broke down crying and I called you after interviews and you were emotional. And it's I think that's the curtain that I talk about. We pull back each and every week.
Nothing. Yeah, you said it very well. I don't have the right eloquent words to add to that. Well, it is 9:58, and I want to wrap up. Do you want to tell everyone about the Rose Notebook and how they can submit their profile?
Yeah. I just want to say, first of all, Slim, that's Scott. We call him Slim inside here. I want to speak to Slim and also his Sally Mark. They got a platform called ENDDBIPA. It's on Instagram. ENDDBIPA. It's on Instagram, and they're one of the first people to understand the approach I was trying to take and how I was trying to educate the general public on the Groves Notebook. And they have their own vision on how to bring that awareness as well. And they're doing that.
I have to interrupt you because we're going to get cut off.
Okay. I just want to tell, first of all, I want to say, you know, tell the listeners, thanks for tuning in each and every week. Y'all already know, same time, same place, same fight. Rant you, Rob, no rehearsals. Why? Because I live it. Make sure, like I said, you visit, you know, NDDI on IG.
Yep.
The Groves Notebook on Facebook. And peace and blessings to all, man. God bless. Stay safe out there.
Peace, everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The caller has hung up.